The presidential motorcade had just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
You know, I really didn't want to go down this Trump-Russia hole. I mean, I covered this a while ago, and I laid the case where there is some Trump associations, obviously through business dealings, that the left has built their foundation on, but the real scandal was with Obama and the NSA hacking on all of America, including Donald Trump. But there's also a part of me that thinks, are we getting played? I mean, think about the relationships that we have seen. It's almost like one wave into the next wave into the next wave has occurred with these crazy relationships that have all burned themselves to the ground over time that you wouldn't think would have. I mean, first, you look through the primary season. You look at what happened with the Christian right, the evangelical right. You look at what happened with Fox News and Breitbart. And you look at what happened with Drudge. And you look at what they all early on. And then you get into the campaign season and you look at what happened with the Clintons and the Trump family. You know, they were once tight. They were once golf buddies. Now they're at each other's throats. Look at CNN. Look at Joe Scarborough and Zika Brzezinski. I mean, Mika Brzezinski. I know the real name. But Nick DiPaolo called her Zika. I thought that was pretty funny. But you look at the fact that they were calling each other, leaving voicemails as they were besties, and now they're at each other's throats. You look at CNN, who was basically hosting rallies for Donald Trump, you know, during the Fox debates that he bailed on. And now CNN's on a personal mission to destroy him. You look at the fact that Kathy Griffin is hanging out in photos with them. Next thing you know, she's holding up his bloody head, all because he became president. Shia LaBeouf, that crazy guy. Apparently, in a tweet going back to 2013, Donald Trump's like, yeah, I know him really well. I really hope he, you know, whatever he's going through, he works it out. Because Donald Trump was concerned about him. Next thing you know, he wins office, and Mr. LaBeouf out there, he's going off like a friggin' parrot with Tourette syndrome, yelling at this guy's face, personal space invader, getting all up in his grill going, he will not divide us, he will not divide us. I mean, it's almost like the world's just gone mad. But I mean, are we getting played? It's not like we don't have the first reality TV president. Then we find out Kid Rock wants to run for Senate. They're talking about Caitlyn Jenner running for Senate. I mean, heck, let's go ahead and have Grimace from McDonald's run. Why not have Neo become Supreme Court Justice? Why not? Nothing makes sense. But I mean, when we get down to it, we need to look at this meeting, this ever-growing meeting, the everlasting, ever-growing Donald Trump-Russian meeting that happened last week. You know, a lot of times my show prep, I spend so much time on it because I don't have unlimited resources, and my show airs over the weekend. I had some of this information together near the end of last week before I put out the Linda Sarzal and the G20 stuff that we did. And while I was getting this information together, I was sharing it with friends. And of course, you know, a lot of people are still just on this whole thing about, am I on Trump's side? Am I not on Trump's side? I'm trying to be as objective as possible. You know, I didn't vote for Trump. If he does something right, if he stumbles into conservatism, if he trips on over into constitutional land, I'm going to give him praise for it. If he doesn't, then I'm going to call him out. And I'm not going to just choose sides just because I'm going to choose sides. I'm not going to be staunchly planting my flag against somebody because I feel I need to maintain that position. You know, I feel like people have done that for 8 years, that they haven't broken that habit. I feel like the media has forgotten how to report for 8 years because they've done no reporting for 8 years. So now they're having to relearn how to be, you know, an investigative reporter. And it's the same out of practice mentality that some of my friends have had with whether or not they pick somebody, how they view their elected representatives. And so we get into this whole discussion of whataboutism. And when I'm displaying what I've learned about the players involved with this Russian meeting, I'm just displaying the facts. I was floored by the behind-the-scenes associations, which when I lay them out, they're really going to blow you away. And so I was kind of stunned. I'm like, wow, did you know this person is associated with this, who's associated with this? And it has nothing to do with Trump. And this isn't me unpacking this to defend Trump. This is me showing that the media is not focusing on an aspect that is very important and very dangerous and very insightful to those who probably should know what the real focus of this story should be. It shouldn't be about this stupid meeting with some publicist who got in touch with some pop star who has the dirt on Hillary Clinton, and then they get down to this meeting to find out there isn't anything there. There's a bigger story on the other side that we all should be privy to. But in displaying this information out to some friends, I start getting hit with this, well, I'm not into this whataboutism. And I'm like, what I'm displaying isn't whataboutism. You know what? I'm not trying to defend. I'm not trying to say, well, Donald Trump did this. Well, what about Hillary? That's not what I was trying to do. I'm just saying these are the details that aren't being talked about. And in doing that, I found this article from The Federalist that talks about why the charge of whataboutism is dishonest. It's by David Harsanyi. It says, terrible. This is terrible. Agreed. Donald Trump Jr. is not only a crook, but is now, this points to treason. Well, unless new information emerges, it doesn't look like Donald Trump Jr. broke any laws. Taking a meeting with a foreign national might be shady and scandalous and stupid, but it's almost surely not illegal unless there was some quid pro quo, etc. And the meeting doesn't even make the broadest interpretation of treason. By using this kind of over-the-top rhetoric, you're taking a legitimate political scandal and overplaying your hand, as you have numerous times in your quest for impeachment. Look at the Trumpkin with his ready-made talking point. So nothing that is technically illegal can be wrong. It's horrible, but not treason. You go with that. See, these are arguments he's dealing with online, and when I'm talking in that term, I'm kind of using the person who's making the argument against him, and this is the point of the article. But as I go on, of course, a lack of criminality doesn't mean there was a lack of corrupt behavior. No one should excuse the actions of the Trump administration. But neither should we expect Trump voters to embrace a standard that Democrats dismissed only a few months ago. When James Comey found that Hillary Clinton had broken laws related to the handling of classified information, then attempted to conceal the evidence from investigators, she escaped because prosecutors were supposedly unable to prove intent. We were repeatedly lectured that the only thing that mattered was that Hillary had been legally cleared. She was ready to go, ready to lead, and so on. Many of us pointed out that her defense was setting a corrosive precedent, which is more than we can say for a majority of Democrats. Because the election is over, dude. When Hillary is president, you can impeach her. Concentrate on what's happening now. It's both happening right now. Condemning Trump's bad behavior shouldn't inhibit anyone from pointing out the duplicity and partisan aims of liberals who are attempting to gain back power. Those people are part of the equation as well. In the same way the past doesn't excuse Trump's actions, his actions don't excuse the behavior of his antagonist. Charges of whataboutism are often used to shut the discussion down. Moreover, the idea that Americans should contemplate politics without any historical context is a brand new and utterly absurd demand. Despite what you have heard, history did not start on January 21st. The two are not comparable. This isn't about hypocrisy. This is about collusion with Russia, America's number one geopolitical foe. The problem is, your newfound concern regarding Russia's role in the world isn't very convincing. Mine, on the other hand, is consistent. If you are truly worried about collusion, then you would have been concerned about Hillary's foundation engaging in favor trading with a number of hostile and illiberal powers, including the New York Times, what they reported, with Russian oligarchs. You would have been concerned that Democrats were shopping the Christopher Steele dossier, which came directly from Russian sources, to anyone who would listen. And not only did the media bite on this fictitious intel, but the dossier may well have been used to unmask American citizens. Was this treason? Collusion? I don't know. But you don't care. So I don't believe you're arguing in good faith. And so that article kind of dovetails into what we're going to talk about here in just a minute, but I want to set the stage to let you know that what I'm going to discuss in the background to this Donald Trump meeting that happened last week is not whataboutism. I'm not saying, well, Donald Trump, he should be absolved from his meeting with the Russians because of look what the Clintons did. This isn't what I'm talking about. And then I'm not saying that he should have gone out and got this information and sought it because, oh, well, if the devil had the bad political scoop on the Clintons, he should go out and get it. I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying there are some ties that need to be exposed to the light of day, and I'm going to give them to you on the other side of the break. Be right back.
This is Adrian Slade.
Adrian Slade Broadcast.
All right, so what we know about this Donald Trump meeting with the Russian attorney. What's her name? Natalia Veselnitskaya, something like that. What we know is Donald Trump Jr. gets this email, and then they get this meeting set up. This lady's got all this bad intel on Hillary Clinton, and it could destroy her campaign. And Donald Trump Jr. meets up with her. They sit down, and there's absolutely nothing there. And then he leaves empty-handed. Paul Manafort's with them, and I told you in that episode that we did months ago that Paul Manafort, I mean, he registered as a foreign agent. He rebooted his career after it fell all apart. I think he dealt with the Dole campaign. He was an advisor way back then. It all fell apart. He went to the Ukraine. He helped out, was it Viktor Yushchenko? I can't remember who it was. One of those guys. He ended up rebooting his career with Trump. And then he registered as a foreign agent, and now he's working over there. So obviously Manafort's got some ties with at least the Ukrainians. I mean, no surprise there. But in that meeting, you start to go, well, who is this Natalia chick? Who is this Russian attorney? Well, and who? What's the story with the adoption thing? What is that all about? Now, the backstory is basically this lady came to America. First, she was granted special entry to the United States because the Justice Department had to allow her in at a special request of the Justice Department. Homeland Security actually let this out of the bag because a significant public benefit parole document was requested by the Justice Department so she could participate in a court case that was going on. And this is from The Hill. Homeland Security Department confirmed that Russian lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya was granted special entry into the United States on multiple occasions in 2015 and 16 at the request of the Justice Department because of a special significant public benefit parole document requested by the Justice Department so she could participate in a court case for a client. She was involved in a case revolving around the enforcement of a civil asset forfeiture case against Prevezin Holdings, a company owned by a Russian businessman, Denis Katsev, whom Veselnitskaya represented as a private attorney in their home country. Katsev is one of three Moscow businessmen connected to a lobbying campaign against the Magnitsky Act. Now, what is the Magnitsky Act? The Magnitsky Act is basically, there was a lawyer, and this lawyer, last name Magnitsky, he actually found out about this law, this tax evasion scheme going on through real estate in New York The Russian oligarchs were avoiding taxation by laundering money through this. And then he brings it up to the light of day to the Russian government. Only the Russian government, they're in on it. So they throw him in prison. He's in there for over a year. He eventually dies in prison. And apparently the Obama administration decides to put sanctions on the Russians because of it. So they make this act and they bar, I think it's like 11 Russian businessmen from doing business with America. And then in response to that, Vladimir Putin turns around and says, well, good, we're not going to let you adopt any Russian children. So that's what that all boils down to. And so the lobbying company that was campaigning against it was spearheaded by a Russian-American lobbyist, Renat Akhmiskin. I guess that's how you say his name. All these freaking names, I tell you. But he actually is a guy who showed up in that meeting with Veselnitskaya at Donald Trump Jr., we just found out. Now, continuing on the Hill piece, a federal prosecutor in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Manhattan told the court in a hearing in January 2016 that the extraordinary circumstances parole request needed to be approved by Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Quote, in October, the government bypassed the normal visa process and gave a type of extraordinary permission to enter the country called immigration parole. Assistant U.S. Attorney Paul Manitolani was quoted in the court transcript as saying, that's a discretionary act that the statute allows the attorney general to do in extraordinary circumstances. In this case, we did that so Mr. Katsiv could testify. And we made that further accommodation, allowing his Russian lawyer into the country to assist. Loretta Lynch issued a statement that distanced herself from any government decision that let the Russian lawyer enter the country, saying the former attorney general, quote, does not have any personal knowledge of Ms. Veselnitskaya's travel. So Loretta Lynch signed off to let this lady into the country with no visa. Not only that, she gets to hang out in Congress with no visa, hanging out with Obama's Russian ambassador over this situation. I mean, the statement was issued right after President Trump suggested Lynch might have been responsible for the Russian lawyer's encounter with his son, who's under investigation. So we go on a little further from The Observer. The Hill reported, which we talked about earlier, interviews with half a dozen Americans who came in contact with Veselnitskaya or monitored her U.S. activities in 2016 make clear that one of her primary goals was to see if Congress or other political leaders would be interested in repealing the 2012 Magnitsky Act, punishing Russia, or at least ensuring that the Magnitsky name would not be used on a new law working its way through Congress in 2016 to punish human rights violators across the globe. In an interview, Veselnitskaya claimed her meeting with Donald Trump Jr. was part of a lobbying campaign to get American officials to see, quote, the real circumstances behind the Magnitsky Act. She said that, or she has been seen sitting in the front row of the House Foreign Affairs Committee hearing with Russian ambassador days after Don Jr.'s meeting, Mr. Mike McFaul, who was the Russian ambassador under President Obama. She was given access without any visa by the Southern District of New York, which was led by Parit Bahara. You know him. He was a Chuck Schumer friend. Parit was the attorney who was fired after he led the block of the Donald Trump travel ban. Remember that guy? That's right. Now, the Magnitsky Act passed with bipartisan support in 2012, froze U.S. assets of Russians purportedly involved with the detention and suspicious death of whistleblower Sergei Magnitsky in a Russian prison in 2009 that we talked about earlier. Magnitsky represented the U.S. investor Bill Browder, who was the largest foreign investor in Russia at the time. So stay with me on this because these names are going to come up later as bigger connections are made. I'm just setting the table right now. Back to the article. Bill Browder claimed Russian organization or organized criminals colluded with Russian government officials to collect $230 million tax rebates on Browder's companies. So that's where the whole real estate thing comes into play. It was going to go up for $230 million a tax settlement, and we'll get into the settlement of that coming up in a minute. but from the Daily Caller. Let's get into this whole Magnitsky Act thing. Radical left-wing icon, former California Democratic Representative Ron Dellums was hired. He was a hired lobbyist for Natalia Veselskaya. Dellums, who represented liberal San Francisco and Oakland, California, is a longtime darling of left-wing political activists. The former congressman is one of several high-profile Democrat partisans who was on Veselskaya's payroll. So he's hired by her, working to defeat the law that is the hated object of personal vendetta waged by Russian President Vladimir Putin. According to a complaint filed by the Department of Justice Foreign Agents Registration Act Division, Dellums failed to register as a foreign agent representing a Russian-driven effort led by Veselskaya to repeal the Magnitsky Act. The act was a bipartisan bill enacted in December of 2012 intended to punish Russian officials responsible for the death of Sergei Magnitsky, who died in a Moscow prison. President Barack Obama signed the bill into law. The legislation bars 18 Russians from entering the United States because of the lawyer's death. Putin retaliated by freezing American adoptions of Russian children and barred 18 Americans from entering entering Russia. Magnitsky was a tax lawyer with the Hermitage Fund. Keep the Hermitage Fund on your brain. The London-based firm that invested in Russia. The tax lawyer uncovered a $230 million scheme allegedly run by Russian mobsters. He informed Russian officials that the corruption was going on. Instead of investigating Prevezin Holdings, a Russian-owned firm implicated in the scandal, the Russian officials arrested Magnitsky and he died in prison. That's where this whole act comes into play. Now, Denis Katsev, who was an owner of Prevezin that we talked about earlier, he and Veselskaya created the Human Rights Accountability Global Initiative Foundation in the United States. The foundation was designed to repeal the Magnitsky Act, so she's going around trying to meet up with all these people, including Donald Trump Jr., to make this all happen. So the former congressman is not only one of the notable team partisan Democrats that Veselskaya hired to defeat the Magnitsky Act, Glenn Simpson, founder of Fusion GPS, also joined the Russian lawyer and worked with her on a legal case for years, according to the Washington Post. Now, who's Fusion GPS? That's the firm that reportedly commissioned the phony dossier authored by former British spy Christopher Steele that alleged salacious and largely erroneous charges against President Donald Trump. So Veselskaya and Glenn Simpson, they all worked, and that whatever his name is, the guy who was a part of that Human Rights Foundation, the lobbyist, they all were a part of Fusion GPS. So she has an ulterior motive here. And we're going to get into more of the ulterior motives of Veselskaya here on the other side of the break.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
All right, welcome back. Now, so if you're just tuning in, Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, they sit down with this attorney, this Russian attorney, Veselskaya. She actually not only is somebody who works with Fusion GPS, who put out the fake dossier against Donald Trump. She also is involved with fighting the Magnitsky Act, which was the sanctions against the Russians because of the lawyer who was put in jail by the Russians for uncovering Russian mobsters laundering money through New York City real estate. She also was somebody who was photographed at anti-Trump rallies. Social media accounts show her all over the web of her appearing at anti-Trump rallies. So you have to wonder, what is the deal with this chick? Is she a plant? I mean, let's go on further. From The Observer, back in 2015, the Wall Street Journal reported that Hillary Clinton opposed the Magnitsky Act while serving as Secretary of State. Her opposition coincided with Bill Clinton giving a speech in Moscow for Renaissance Capital, a Russian investment bank, for which he was paid $500,000. Quote, Mr. Clinton also received a substantial payout in 2010 from Renaissance Capital, a Russian investment bank whose executives were at risk of being hurt by possible U.S. sanctions tied to a complex and controversial case of alleged corruption in Russia. Members of Congress wrote to Ms. Clinton in 2010 seeking to deny visas to people who had been implicated by Russian accountant Sergei Magnitsky, who was jailed and died in prison after he uncovered evidence of a large tax refund fraud. William Browder, we talked about him earlier, a foreign investor in Russia who had hired Mr. Magnitsky, alleged that the accountant had turned up evidence that Renaissance officials, among others, participated in the fraud. The State Department opposed the sanctions bill at the time, as did the Russian government. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov pushed Hillary Clinton to oppose the legislation during a meeting in St. Petersburg in June 2012, citing that U.S.-Russia relations would suffer as a result. The Wall Street Journal report continued, a few weeks later, Bill Clinton participated in a question-and-answer session at a Renaissance Capital Investors Conference. He was paid $500,000. After the appearance, Mr. Clinton received a personal thank you from Vladimir Putin, then the Russian Prime Minister. The government news agency TASS reported. A spokesperson for Hillary Clinton denied the connection between her stance against the bill and Bill Clinton's paid speech. But the conflict of interest is undeniable. During the presidential election, the Clinton campaign even took measures to stop a story reporting the link. An email released by WikiLeaks from Clinton campaign chair John Podesta in May 2015 noted, with the help of the research team, we killed a Bloomberg story trying to link Hillary Rodham Clinton's opposition to the Magnitsky bill to a $500,000 speech that William Jefferson Clinton gave in Moscow. So obviously the Clintons were against the Magnitsky bill, just as Veselnitskaya is. Now this, from the Business Insider. Remember, William Browder, the Hermitage Foundation. According to William Browder from the Hermitage Foundation, Veselnitskaya's clients and colleagues include Sberbank Capital. Remember Sberbank Capital. They were also named as a defendant in a lawsuit in a New York federal court over a dispute about a takeover of a Russian granite company. In March, Sberbank appointed Mark E. Kosiewicz to represent in the case. He is President Trump's personal lawyer. So what about Sberbank? This from Forbes. The media's focus on Trump's Russia connections ignores the much more extensive and lucrative business relationships of top Democrats with Kremlin-associated oligarchs and companies, thanks to the Panama Papers. Remember the Panama Papers? That was that big document dump globally of where everybody was housing all of their money in the offshore accounts in Panama, and somebody just dumped it all out. I mean, there was stuff related to George Soros. I actually had a show I was lining up about a year ago on the Panama Papers, and it got shelved because a lot of other things just blew right through to the forefront. And now I kind of wish I went back and did it, because according to the Panama Papers, we know that the Podesta Group, founded by John Podesta's brother Tony, lobbied for Russia's largest bank, Sberbank. Quote, Sberbank is the Kremlin. They don't do anything major without Putin's go-ahead, and they don't tell him no either, explained a retired senior U.S. intelligence official. According to a Reuters report, Tony Podesta was among the high-profile lobbyists registered to represent organizations backing Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych. Among these was the European Center, which paid Podesta $900,000 for his lobbying. That's not all. The busy Podesta Group also represented Uranium One, a uranium company acquired by the Russian government, which received approval from Hillary Clinton's State Department to mine for uranium in the U.S. and gave Russia 20% control of the U.S. uranium. Amazing how that happened. And yet there was no outrage by anybody except for a few of us on the right. The New York Times reported Uranium One's chairman, Frank Guista, made significant donations to the Clinton Foundation, and Bill Clinton was paid $500,000 for one speech from a Russian investment bank that has links to the Kremlin that was promoting Uranium One stock. Notably, Frank Guista, the Clinton Foundation's largest and most controversial donor, does not appear anywhere in the Clintons' non-private emails. It is possible that the email of such key donors were automatically scrubbed to protect the Clinton Foundation. They were probably beaten with a giant mallet out in the backyard, you know, wiped with like a rag, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous what we see here. But what we also find out is that William Browder, I told you to keep that name in the back of your mind, who gave the information about Veselnitskaya, who works with Hermitage Capital Management, is one of the largest portfolio investors in Russia, is listed as a donor to the Clinton Global Initiative. All of this stems back to the Clintons. And this isn't whataboutism. I'm just telling you that when you look at it, the meeting goes into this situation where it's like, hey, we have stuff on Hillary. This is at the same time that Hillary is putting out the emails, let's get Donald Trump the nomination. We can't deal with Ted Cruz. We can't deal with Marco Rubio, but we can deal with Donald Trump. So they set up this meeting to put the dirt out on Hillary Clinton. This lady, who is funded by a bank, which is directly controlled by Vladimir Putin, is the same bank that pays Bill Clinton $500,000 for a speech based on a deal so that they get 20% control of uranium in the United States by Uranium One Rosatom deal. She's the same person who is in cahoots with another lobbyist and is a part of Fusion GPS to make a fake dossier right around the time of the inauguration. All of this shows that there's something bigger going on. Now, it doesn't help that Donald Trump, on the other hand, jumps right back in it. And every time CNN comes out and says, oh, this is a nothing burger. And every time CNN says, oh, you know, I just believe it's crap, he stirs it back up. And we keep finding out more and more stuff because they're not forthcoming. Why? Are we just getting played here? Is this just one giant game? Who the heck knows? But it should be very troubling that we're dealing with all of these lies and web of deceit all under this. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Let's just package this whole thing up. This lady who came to America, this Russian attorney who met with Don Jr., she actually was a part of a law firm who was investigating this Russian mobster oligarch money laundering scheme where they were evading Russian taxes by running money through New York real estate developments. And then this lawyer and auditor ends up blowing it open, going to the Russian government and saying, hey, look at this. And then they go, hey, you're going to jail. And they put him in jail. He ends up dying in jail. We end up passing an act because we didn't like it. We thought it was bad on human rights. Next thing you know, the Russians turn around in response and give us this, we're not going to allow you to adopt kids, Russian children act. And let's not forget the crux of the Magnitsky Act, which was that real estate money laundering scheme by the Russians through the New York real estate that Veselnitskaya was overseeing as far as through the litigation. That actually was settled under the current administration's State Department, which people had a lot of problems with. And the Democrats were on TV and in the news posturing. We want to know why this case was settled, because it was settled for like an eighth of what was actually being asked for. You know, it wasn't even nearly what was required. The problem is that entire settlement was set in motion a couple of years ago. So it wasn't even Trump's decision. It wasn't his White House decision to do that. It was something that was set in motion earlier. And one of the key cruxes of that, which Parit Bhara and Veselnitskaya were a part of, was the fact that one of its key witnesses was found dead a day before he was supposed to testify in Moscow when he was hoisting a jacuzzi up to his high rise and fell out of the building. So we know there's something going on there. But if you were a Clinton, you were in the best situation by having Donald Trump as your president because you closed up your foundation. You sleek off into the night. You don't have somebody, even though he was crying, lock her up, lock her up. Are they doing it? He could get his Justice Department to do it. I don't see that happening. You know, and that's the thing. You've got the fact that Veselnitskaya had the same interest as Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton, who got paid by her bank. Do you see where I'm going with all this? The fact that you have a perfect situation with a Trump presidency to just kind of allow things to dissipate and clear the air. And the Clintons can, again, as they always do, sleek off into the night. And it's not like anybody else is going to get prosecuted because Susan Rice, Fusion GPS, who Veselnitskaya worked for, they're just avoiding, they're declining to even testify. I mean, check out these stories, because PJ Media reported this. Interesting. Fusion GPS co-founder refuses to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee. The co-founder of the shady opposition research firm behind the infamous Russian dossier on President Donald Trump is refusing to testify before the Senate Judiciary Committee next week, according to Politico. The committee listed Fusion GPS co-founder Glenn Simpson, a former Wall Street Journal investigative reporter, as a witness in the July 19th hearing titled Oversight of the Justice Department's Non-Enforcement of the Foreign Agents Registration Act, Lessons from the Obama Administration and Current Compliance Practices. Now, there's speculation that the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Charles Grassley, might subpoena him. Charles Grassley has been all over this. He's got all the information on his website. He's connected a lot of these dots. I didn't get all this information that we went over from him, but from what I understand, he's put a lot of it together, and a lot of it is, you know, available right there on his website. But going back to this PJ Media article, the unverified dossier that claimed Trump and Russia colluded to torpedo Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign included salacious details that have been widely debunked. During the 2016 campaign, Simpson's firm hired the British spy Christopher Steele, who ultimately produced the infamous dossier, which suggests Trump took part in the intricate Kremlin-backed plot to ascend to the White House. He and the White House have strenuously denied the allegations of the document. The decision by Grassley to call Simpson to break publicly is one of the riskiest moves in Congress's six-month-old probes into Russian meddling in the presidential election, and it amounts to a decision to rip the bandage off the investigation that has at times crawled along slowly. Quote, I think we need to find out what the facts are and let the chips fall where they may, said the Senator Majority Whip John Cornyn from Texas, a member of the Judiciary Committee. The committee called Simpson, who helped establish Fusion GPS in 2009, to testify during a larger hearing about the role of foreign lobbying. Simpson joins CrowdStrike and Susan Rice and two other Russian gate players who have resisted efforts to appear before Congress. CrowdStrike is the private security firm, the cybersecurity firm hired by the DNC that concluded that Putin hacked the presidential election. CrowdStrike is based in Irvine, California, and is also the only group that the DNC allowed directly to examine its servers. Not even the FBI has been granted access to its servers. U.S. agencies have instead relied on CrowdStrike's work. There is no other known forensic evidence which has been publicly disclosed to link the Kremlin to the attacks, including a series of intelligence community statements and reports. Questions have emerged about the reliability of the company's findings. Susan Rice, Barack Obama's longtime national security advisor, declined back in May to testify before the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on crime and terrorism about Russian activities during the 2016 election campaign. Senator Lindsey Graham had requested that Rice appear and has been particularly curious about her unmasking activities, which we talked about in an early show as well. At the end of June, Rice finally agreed to testify before the House Intelligence Committee in a closed hearing, which will be held sometime in the August recess. Now, NBC is reporting that Natalia Veselnitskaya, the Russian lawyer who met with Trump during the promising dirt on Hillary meeting, was accompanied by Russian-American lobbyist described as a former Soviet counterintelligence officer who is suspected by some U.S. officials as having ongoing ties to Russian intelligence. So everything that's going on, we keep focusing on this stupid little meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and all of the dirty details he could have gotten, but we're not even looking at the fact that there is money being paid to the Clintons, to Bill Clinton, and they're making deals, giving out uranium, and the Russians are basically getting assets and they're, I mean, it's amazing to me what has been going on and the ties that can be made on the left to the Russians and how no one's focusing on it. And that's why I did for today's program. If you stuck with me, thank you for doing so. We'll be on to a different topic next week. I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. You can listen to me on Talk America Radio every Saturday, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Sunday, 8 a.m. Listen to the podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play. You can get the free Adrian Slade Show Roku channel. And I'll see you guys next week.